Let's begin then with Mr. Toma, correct? And so we will now begin. Who has our clock? Who's our clock keeper? Okay. All right.
Good morning, board members. My name is Bill Toma, as was stated. Empleo Street, San Luis Obispo, California. I did take the oath, and my declaration is true and accurate as presented. And so I would like to just, the major conclusion to my report was that, go ahead. Okay. That I was looking at the electrical issues related to what occurred on the date of December 19th. And my conclusion is that the cause of the failure of the electrical system on that date was a function of seals lacking, water seals lacking in a number of conduits that entered into the influent building. And that is the cause of this this electrical issue. Had nothing to do with maintenance or ongoing maintenance or operation or replacement or deferred maintenance. And I'll welcome any questions you might have had about my report.
The seals that you're...
I tell you what we should do, I think, with this. Let's let them go ahead and do their cross-examination, and then when that's done, we can follow up so that we don't get too involved in this.
I think I can remember my question.
Okay, write it down. Yeah. Write it down, yeah. But let them go ahead and we'll do it this way. Otherwise, we're going to be...
Mr. Toma is a district witness, so direct would go first.
Correct.
And we're not going to have any direct examination.
Okay. All right. Then for the prosecution, do you have any cross-examination?
Okay. Do you have your declaration in front of you, Mr. Toma?
Yes, I do.
Okay. When were you contacted to provide a declaration in this matter?
Approximately 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, something like that. Okay.
What materials were you given to review?
I reviewed documents that were provided to me in terms of the State Water Quality Control Board's complaint. I reviewed, I made a visit to the site, conducted an interview with operators that were on duty at the site. I have reviewed, I have knowledge of some of the work that was done at that plant as our firm has done some design work at that plant. And I think that's about it.
Ms. Macedo, I don't want to interrupt you. If you're referencing an exhibit, can you just say what that is for all the board members if they want to look at it?
Absolutely. If I refer to something specific.
You were referencing his declaration, right?
I'm referring to his declaration, which is Exhibit 25 submitted with the district's materials.
Thank you.
Were you provided with all of the briefs in this action? You said you reviewed the complaint. Did you review the prosecution team's opening or rebuttal briefs?
I do not recall.
You do not recall?
I don't know. I'm not sure that I can identify exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. The prosecution team submitted an evidentiary brief on July 27th.
I don't recall the date of the document that I reviewed. I'm sorry. I think I may have, but I don't recall that that's the exact exhibit. If you wanted to show it to me, I might recall.
Okay, let's go about it a different way. You said you were contacted a couple months ago to prepare your declaration.
Yes.
Okay. You prepared that declaration in assistance with attorneys at Downey Brand?
They reviewed it before it was submitted. However, I developed this brief on my own, based on my own investigation and my own interviews and my own conducting my own investigation.
When did you provide the first draft to Downey Brand?
I can't tell you a date. It was probably about a week before the final was completed.
Okay. Their submission was due in August, so approximately August?
Yes.
Okay. Have you reviewed any documents since then?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So you have not reviewed the prosecution team's rebuttal brief?
I don't believe so.
Okay. And in your declaration, you describe yourself as an expert on electrical issues, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Would you describe yourself as an expert on wastewater treatment plants?
I would say I have experience in wastewater treatment plants. We've done a number of projects at wastewater treatment plants. I would say yes.
Okay. Would you describe yourself as an expert on standard operating procedures related to valves?
No.
Okay. Would you describe yourself as an expert on grading or ponding issues?
No.
Okay. Would you describe yourself as an expert on leaky influent gates?
No.
Okay. Have you ever been an expert before?
Yes.
When was that?
Twice. About 10 years ago and once about 25 years ago. Okay. It's not something I care to do.
I want to show you one item, and I'll pop it up for the board members. This is Exhibit 2, submitted with the prosecution team's opening brief, and I will hand the witness a copy. Does counsel need a copy, or do you have it handy?
Oh, we don't need it, thank you.
So if I'm understanding your declaration correctly, you're an expert in electrical matters, correct?
Yes.
Okay. If you could turn to the final page of the exhibit, page 3, and I'll scroll down to page 3 on the screen. I will represent to you that this is an excerpt from a budget from the district's 2010 and 2011 budget, talking about a proposed electrical system upgrade. Take as much time as you need to read it.
Okay, I've read it.
Have you seen this document?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Had you considered this document prior to submitting your declaration?
Yes, I have.
Okay. In your expert opinion, is it the best standard of care to allow wiring that is deteriorating due to groundwater intrusion to continue to not be upgraded?
Wiring that is deteriorating, correct, would not be adequate to be remain in service. However, I have found that not all the wire in the facility was deteriorating.
That wasn't my question.
Okay.
You understand my question. Mm-hmm. So separate and apart from the cause of the spill, as an expert electrician, the reason you're here today, mm-hmm. deteriorating groundwater or deteriorating wiring from groundwater intrusion is not the best standard of care.
Deteriorating wire that has not been replaced is not a good standard of care.
Thank you.
If identified as deteriorating, not all the wire, again, at the facility was deteriorating. So
you read this document that there had been problems identified with deteriorating groundwater, correct?
Right.
Thank you. Nothing further for this witness.
Okay. Any board questions? Mr. Jeffries. And the clock stops, by the way, when we do this. Okay.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
I have probably three questions for you. One is the conduits that you referred to with the seals that were faulty, were they below grade?
The conduits were below grade, yes.
Is there a periodic maintenance procedure to examine those particular conduits that are below grade for water intrusion?
A wire in conduit below grade is expected to be in water. It's by definition, it's considered a wet location. So the answer is so it is a wet location. The seals are not normally in any experience that I've had been a function of an inspection procedure.
So you're saying that once a seal is placed, then that should be serviceable for the life of that facilities?
Yes.
And is this location, is it normally an area that is wet?
Yes, it is.
Is the wiring, is it a plastic coating or a cloth coating?
The wiring that was installed.
Yes, is it a submergible type of wiring?
Yes, it's THW wire, which is the wet. The W means wet location.
Yeah, I understand. Right? Yeah, okay. All right, thank you, sir.
I have a few questions for you.
Yes, sir.
I noticed in my reading of the briefs mentions of the plumbing code, and it, but I was interested in whether the electric code applies to this facility.
Of course, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. California Electric Code, yes.
Okay. And does, in your review of the information that was provided to you, did you find any electrical code violations?
Of the documents or of the facility?
Of the facility. You know, anything that you thought, you mentioned the seals, but I'm wondering
yes.
if you picked up on anything else that may have been involved in causing the sequence of events that caused the spill.
There was nothing that I saw that was a code violation that resulted in any of the outage condition that occurred. What I would say that the seals were a violation themselves for having not been placed in the first place during construction.
Okay.
That right. should have taken place probably back in 1986-87.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Jordan, and then Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Toma. The description you're giving of what you inspected is wiring and conduit, but the picture up on that was up there a moment ago is not wiring and conduit. It looks like it's loose wiring in a vault. Now, did you observe any wiring that more closely resembled what was up there on the board?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand your question, please.
Okay, so you described conduit wiring as wiring that's in a wet location and
correct.
Sealed and is supposed to be there.
Correct.
When I look at that picture, it's not in conduit. It doesn't look like it's supposed to be in a wet location under grade. So my question was, did you observe any wiring in your review that resembled that picture?
I have reviewed that box, and to clarify, that box is below grade, and it is anticipated that water would be present occasionally and incidentally in that box. So the seals are between that box and the inside of the building where the damage and the incident occurred. So this box is outside on grade, exposed to the weather. When that and when you pull wires from through a conduit, when you get from one building to another, there's too many 90-degree elbows to go through, so you have to place boxes in the site for pulling.
Okay.
So that's a pull box where they pull the wires to and then go into the building. Where it goes into the building from the exterior box is where the seals were to have been placed.
Okay, but still my question was, did you observe any situation similar to that where there was bare wiring that was decomposing due to immersion in water?
No, I did not.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnston.
Mr. Toma, I've just been kind of reviewing your declaration, and tell me if I'm correct. It appears that your analysis of what happened then is that there was a shunt trip switch in the box we've been talking about, which is below grade, expected to get water on occasion, and that the conduit going into the box containing the shunt trip switch was lacking seals, which had been specified in the original 1986 construction and which the original electrical contractor hadn't put in. And
correct.
It's because of the lack of the seals that water came into that box, and that tripped and therefore tripped the breaker controlling all four influent pumps. Is that correct?
It tripped one circuit breaker that, in fact, then tripped off all four pumps. There's an exhibit on the board where I might just point out real quickly right there. There's the original construction documents for 1986. This is exhibit, I believe it's B. I mean, let me just double check here. A in my declaration. And right those words right there, I believe, state seal all conduits, typical. And the little dots there indicate the seal locations. The box was right outside here. The seals were between it and the inside building. The water intruded from the box outside in through those conduits without the seals and into the building. That's the location of the shunt trip switch.
Okay, so the shunt trip switch is in the building containing the influent pumps, is that correct?
Correct. It's at the exterior mid-level landing in the influent pump, and is as I understood it from these plans, was an emergency shutoff for that confined space.
And what I'm seeing on the diagram is that where the conduit entered the building, there should have been a seal on each side of the wall, correct?
I don't know that it was on either side or if it was just in one side. I believe it would have been indicated to be just on one side.
Now, would there also have been seals on the conduit in the box, in that box that was that got flooded?
Not necessarily, and most times not in the box.
And when I say the box, I'm not referring to the box that contains the shunt trip switch. I'm referring to the pull box that was flooded.
The vault.
The vault. Yes.
No, they would normally not be in a vault.
Okay, so you would not normally have seals in a vault. What I'm wondering about is you assert in your declaration that had the work that was considered for budgeting in, I think it was 2004-2005, been done, that even had they pulled new wire through there, that they would not have known that there were no seals.
If you're pulling,
or they would not have known that seals were required, to put it more correctly.
Correct.
They would have known there were no seals because they were able to pull the wire tape through.
Correct.
But they would not have known that seals were required.
Correct.
That's what I'm trying to understand. It seems to me, that's what I'm trying to get my head around. If you've got a contractor doing that budgeted work, or that work that was considered for budgeting in 2004-2005, they're going to pull wire, presumably from that vault, to this shunt trip switch box in the pump room.
Correct.
And would they be referring to this power plan that we're looking at here?
It's possible that they could be. It's possible. It's more likely that they would not. But that's a hypothetical question. I'm not sure that they would or they would not.
Well, how would they know where? I mean, to pull wire, you need to know where both ends of it are.
Well, replacing the wire is a matter of pulling the wire out from one end, pulling a rope in, and pulling the new wire in, and re-terminating.
Right.
And
so you have to know where both ends are.
Yes, that's correct.
And
but you don't know what the route of that conduit takes to get from point A to point B. You see the end of it from on this end. You see the end of it at this end. There's no way to know if there's a hydraulic issue in that conduit or not.
No, I understand. But what I guess what I'm asking you is, if I'm the electrician going into the vault and I'm told to replace this wire, I have to know where both ends of the wire are. I have to look at some sort of plans, right, to know where the wire's going, to know where I'm pulling to, right?
In pull boxes, not necessarily. No, I mean you're pulling wire from one location. You're identifying it by pulling on it, and you're identifying it at the other location. You don't necessarily need to know where it's going if we're just simply replacing that wire for wire.
So then if you're an electrical contractor, right?
Yes.
So if you were responsible for that budgeted or that job that was considered in the budget, replacing that wire with waterproof wire, would you have been working from plans to do it? Or would you have simply gone and pulled wire to see what wiggled on the other end?
That's a hypothetical question. I don't know what I would have done unless I had a set of plans and specifications to answer that question from. I'm not trying to be difficult. I don't know however the plans and specifications called for that to be completed. I did not see plans and specifications.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Any other board? Dr. Wolf.
When Mr. Thomas, when you talked about sealing the conduits, isn't the general industry practice to seal to prevent intrusion of water in conduits?
In what, I'm sorry?
Isn't the seal location generally placed at a point that would prevent water intrusion into the conduits?
Yes.
Therefore, shouldn't the seal be located in the J-box rather than junction box rather than in the lower elevation of the facility?
There's no code that talks about the location of a seal. It strictly talks about that you should seal to prevent moisture intrusion. I think you could argue either direction, but it's not necessarily going to be the location of the seal in the box.
If the National Electrical Code requires sealing wet locations, wouldn't that indicate that the seal should be at a point that prevents water intrusion into the conduit?
No, I would disagree with that.
So you could therefore have moisture and water intrusion that would remain in the conduit.
You want to prevent water from running into a conduit, but there's always going to be water in a conduit just by virtue of condensation. Nearly every wire you pull out of an underground conduit is wet. Comes out, it's wet because of condensation in the conduit itself. And sometimes it's immersed in water for its entire life.
In the circumstance that we have here, there had been a history of water pounding into the junction box based on some evidence that I had read. Therefore, wouldn't the consideration of putting the seal in the box be a better location than a seal in the basement?
Would it be a better location? It possibly could be. That's conjecture on our part. We weren't, again, asked to design the facility, nor was the operator the designer of the facility, as I understand it. So I can answer that question. Would it be better? Possibly. There were drains in the boxes there that drained to other locations. I can't argue that it could have been a better location. It's not necessarily the only location, however.
Mm-hmm. So when you stated earlier with your experience that you do provide electrical services in various facilities, so therefore you do have experience with wet locations.
Correct.
And so on your other projects, do you typically put the seal upstream, as I'll call it, versus downstream from where water could flow?
My typical approach would be to have an air gap and actually rise the conduits above the water level so it doesn't actually enter into the wet location, and then perhaps put a seal on one side or the other to prevent just incidental moisture from entering. That was actually the fix that was provided for here, was to reroute those conduits up over the wall and back down so that there was an air gap so the water couldn't make a continuous mm-hmm. entry into the building.
Okay, thank you. My other question is, as part of the evaluation, investigation, and corrective actions that you took, you performed a protective device coordination study.
Yes, yes, we did.
Yeah. And is a protective device coordination study required in the National Electrical Code?
Is it required for certain facilities? Yes, I believe healthcare. It's required. I'm not certain whether wastewater treatment plants is one. I can't answer that question. But it's not required by code.
So the National Electrical Code does not require protective device coordination study in electrical systems that do have applications which are non-residential, since you know this is the case here.
It's not required for all applications. That's correct.
No, outside of residential applications.
Outside of residential applications, commercial applications, industrial applications, it is not a requirement. Mm-hmm. It is often recommended.
What's the, I couldn't see on the single line diagram, the ampacity of the main breaker. I assume it's a 480 volt three-phase system.
It was a 480 volt three-phase system. If you want to go to exhibit, I believe it's it's B, I'm sorry, exhibit B. That's the breaker that tripped. That's a 400-amp breaker. It flows, that's, I believe, is a 150-amp breaker in a motor control center number one that feeds onto a main breaker for the motor control center that feeds the influent pumps. That is the breaker that was tripped on the date of the December 19th event.
Right. So the main breaker is a 1,200-amp breaker.
This one right here, yes.
All right. And this is a 480-volt system, correct?
Yes, sir.
Is there a code requirement on a 480 system, a 1,000-amp breaker or larger, to have some type of additional protection?
It's required to have a ground fault protective device protection, and it also requires testing to be done on it after it's been installed, correct? Normally, you would do everything you could to prevent provide selective coordination, correct, so that the downstream breakers would trip before the main, correct. And that study, we don't know whether that study was done. It's quite possible it was. I do not know. The designer and the installer of this facility may have done that.
When you performed this study eventually, didn't you, as part of corrective action?
We looked at the operators because of the fact that the 400-amp breaker tripped in ahead of one of the downstream breakers, we did look at, is there something that could be done to better coordinate the breakers downstream with the upstream breaker? And that was the impetus for doing the coordination study. We did identify that because they're molded case circuit breakers, and I know, sir, that you're familiar with this this equipment. The molded case circuit breakers in this range, in their instantaneous region, are very much overlapping in a lot of fault conditions. So the higher fault conditions, pretty much any one of those four breakers could have tripped. So it's impossible to completely selectively coordinate all four breakers so that the downstream breaker trips ahead of the upstream breaker. So it wasn't the impetus for doing the study was to see if we couldn't improve upon any coordination settings to more properly or more effectively operate that system. And it turns out that there's very little that could be done based on the type of equipment that's there.
And when you did this coordination study to verify the setting of a breaker, as you pointed out, you do have, you know, different settings that could inadvertently overlap. Did this include the testing of the breakers beyond just performing the theoretical calculation?
There was no testing done, no, sir. There has been no testing done. I'm not saying that there wasn't going to be or the district wasn't prepared to do that, but we have not done that as of yet.
Is it an industry standard practice, or are there any ANSI standards that recommends preventive maintenance testing?
Yes, there are. I can't cite them for you, sir, but yes.
And those standards would fall under NFPA standards, just like the National Electrical Code?
I can't verify that for you, sir.
The your firm performed preventive maintenance on facilities?
We do perform preventive maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
We normally hire an outside firm, such as Electrotest or Eaton Cutler Hammer or
right.
Square D to do those tests.
And then those companies would perform the electrical preventive maintenance testing, and they would be using the applicable standards.
Yes.
And
I believe.
Pardon me.
Go yes, ahead. I believe
I'm
so.
I'm sorry. With the there was problems with the controls. Also, based on some of the documents that I read, did you have a chance to review or troubleshoot some of these control problems that were discovered during the event?
Could you clarify which control issues? I'm not understanding.
Well, that's the part where I'm confused myself, because there was a reference to controls problem in the MCCs, and I wasn't too sure if we were talking about the, you know, if it was VFD, variable frequency drive problems or other problems.
I can say I did not look at any control issues or incidents, and I don't believe they were in any way a factor in the failure of that system.
When you were hired to perform the study, and you made, in fact, recommendation for, in addition, an arc flash study, was that performed?
The arc flash study has yet to be performed. It was an option on our proposal. It has not been performed by our firm.
Mm-hmm. When you reviewed the single line and the documents, have you had a chance to review the electrical preventative maintenance manual from this facility?
No, I have not.
Were you asked to provide that service? Or?
No, I was not.
Okay. And so when When you looked at the electrical equipment, was there any type of labels or indication of, you know, tested by or and dates?
I believe there are test stickers on the main service equipment near and at the 1200 amp main on the main service equipment, the MSB.
And you don't recall the date of the test?
I do not recall the date of the test. I'm sorry.
Okay. The standby generator, have you, part of your services, did include also a review of the emergency generator system?
Not in particular. It is a part of and shown on a single line diagram, but I was not asked to review it. It was looked at in as part of the coordination study when the single line diagram was furnished to Eaton Cutler Hammer for the coordination study.
Mm-hmm. That emergency standby generator has a transfer switch?
Yes, it I'm sorry. The generator is the generator. The transfer switch is the transfer switch, and it's located at the main switch gear.
Okay.
It's in the lineup with the switchboard. So it's a PG&E underground pull section, a meter CT section, main circuit breakers, a transfer switch, and then distribution.
Okay. So part of that, you know, critical part of a system, did you have also any review or input on the maintenance that was performed and the condition of this critical piece of equipment?
No, I was not. Mm-hmm. And as I understood it operated as it was supposed to have on the day of the event.
Wasn't there problems with the emergency generator? In some of the document that I read, there were problems with the generator being able to perform correctly. And please, you know, correct me
sure.
if I'm mistaken, because there was quite a bit of material to read. And
well, it was my understanding that there was an alarm at the generator location as there was water ponding in that area. And again, I don't know the details of the water or what the alarm was. That was my understanding. That was the first place that the operators responded to, because an alarm came in that there was an issue there. When they got there, they started the generator and it operated correctly. Then they moved into the electrical equipment room where the next alarm was giving them some kind of an alarm. I do not recall what the alarm that caused them to go in there. But the transfer switch is in the main electrical building, which is a different building. The breaker that tripped is downstream of the transfer switch. So when it tripped, the generator could run all day long. It's not going to back up those pumps.
Yeah, because wasn't there a problem with the pumps that they were not running at full RPM instead of running at 1,800 RPM? One of the emergency pump, to be specific, was only running at 1,500 RPM.
I have no knowledge of that. Are you talking about an electric pump?
I don't want to interrupt, but I believe Chairperson Wolf is talking about the emergency backup diesel pump and sort of the intermittent problems it had on the day of the spill. And you're referring to the generator. So I don't want you to be talking about two different things and maybe both be right. And sort of miscommunicating with each other. So
right.
I apologize.
That's why I was wondering if maybe that was the diesel pump that was running at lower RPMs, not the pumps. The influent pumps were off at the time, so they weren't running.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for answering my question.
Thank you, sir.
Just one last question for you. This junction box that had the wires in it. Is it your testimony that that box was properly designed and built and maintained to allow water to get into it from ponding, and that would be okay, that would not be an issue, except for the lack of seals?
I would say I wouldn't say that exactly. No, I wouldn't design a box to be ponded on top of. We would never intentionally design a box to be at the lowest level. My understanding is that the year prior, or maybe 2 years prior, that had been identified, and that the box lid had actually been raised about 2 or 3 inches, so it was out of the ponding area. But the date of the event, there was water flowing, surface water flowing 6 to 12 inches above the box. So even that maintenance lid raising didn't adequately prevent water from getting into the box. Incidental water from rain and condensation and fog and so forth is expected to be in an electrical box outside.
Right.
And that's why they're not sealed. You're just going to have it. So you do preventative measures. The bottom has to have a drain in the bottom of it to seep out. And then if you have a concern about it getting into the building, you should provide some type of a seal or an air gap.
Okay. So if then you knew you had a box that was subject to flooding at times or inundation from water, beyond incidental moisture mm-hmm. from either air or soil, would you take other precautions? I mean, what would be the standard
yeah.
of care in a
yeah.
situation?
The standard of care was that you probably would not want it to become a drain, correct? And I believe prior to the event, the district had taken those precautions, and I'm not sure of the date of that, but they had identified that problem, and the box lid had been raised. I can't tell you exactly how many inches above the ponded area, but that area had depressed slightly. You'd have to talk to the civil engineering experts about that, but my understanding is they identified that, and the box lid was raised so that water wouldn't just run into that box.
Okay.
And that was, I believe, prior to the event.
And do you know when?
I understood it was a couple of years prior to December 19th of 2011.
And where did you get that information from?
In interviewing the Wallace engineers, as well as some testimony that I heard from, I believe it was Mr. Appleton, that that box had been raised.
Okay. All right. Dr. Wolf.
I have one more question. In testimony that were made, and I believe it was Mr. Appleton, you referred to the degradation of the wiring having caused shorts at times. And earlier in some of the questions made, there was a discussion about the replacement of the wiring. And so in your investigation, did you have an opportunity to review some of the history of the wiring problems and perhaps troubleshooting log?
I did not review troubleshooting logs. I have a bit of an understanding. The plant was, as I understood it, built in 1966 or thereabouts. So the original wiring, some of it was probably the old RH wire, the cloth-covered older wire. It was now bordering on 50 years old. I can't say, nor could any of the district folks tell us for sure, that was the subject of all of the issues that they had with wiring. But the wiring that was installed in 1986 was all THW or XHHW, which were all wet location and properly rated. And I believe that the district over, you know, a course of time, I think it's Exhibit 51 kind of shows over time where they had been replacing portions of the wire as projects came along. You'll see this table kind of talks about, and it's difficult to see, but I believe they show the wire sizes, I mean the wire types, and the dates that things were replaced. This was when the wire was installed, what the insulation types were, and the ones that, let's see, I think the THHN, which is not a wet location rated wire, you can see that they were replacing many of those conductors, you know, in back as early as 2006, 2009, and some of it was since the event has occurred. I'll also point out that you can't shut the entire plant down to replace all of the wire. So the district's process was to try to do it incrementally as projects came along, as well as to do it when off-peak times of the year when the systems could be down, if we didn't have a redundant system to take care of a pump, that we could if we had to take a critical pump out of service, you couldn't do that during peaking time, or you had to do it during scheduled maintenance. So the fact that you couldn't just do it all at one time, this was, you know, a process that they were going through, and demonstrates that they were making progress on that that older wire.
On the budget, which was around 2000 and still, I think, 2009, 2010, there was a budget pardon me, to upgrade the electrical system. And I believe part of the upgrade was also the electrical wiring. So was there still some wiring that required upgrades?
I would, as of what period of time, sir?
In around 2009.
I think according to this, there were probably still some cases where the older wiring still existed, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. This concludes. Sure. Go ahead.
Questions? Thank you. Mr. Toma, so the Exhibit A that you had up there, those were the design schematics from 1986, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so you testified that they designed this to include seals. Was that what I heard?
That's what the construction documents show, correct.
Okay. And so the thought would have been that when they constructed that plant in 1986, that somebody would have actually installed those seals, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And would have been inspected.
Right, and so then someone besides the district, a county, or some other entity is supposed to come and inspect?
Normally there'd be either a county inspector or a deputy inspector.
Okay. And would it be easy to tell right away that these weren't there?
I would say so.
No, I mean, just looking.
Yes.
You could walk by and look and see that they weren't there. I mean, you would notice that on a normal day?
You mean after the construction is complete?
Yes, after it's complete.
Not necessarily.
Okay. And as far as you're aware, were there any problems with the fact that there were no seals since 1986 until this event occurred?
It's my understanding that there were no problems prior to this event.
And were the construction design from 1986, was all that wire supposed to be the waterproof wire for the newer construction?
From 1986?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So most of the rewiring was for the 1960 to 1986 construction.
I can't speak to what the intent was, but that would be my intent if I was doing that. Because the other wire was only 17 years old, and it was all properly rated.
Okay. And then you had talked about how these boxes are designed, that they can have water in them and that they drain. Is that correct?
Normally, they would drain through a hole in the bottom, or if there's a physical drain that goes between boxes and maybe a sump pump.
Okay.
I can't speak to that specifically. I do know that there was, in the original construction documents, identified a conduit between boxes. I think it was number 999 on the conduit schedule, that was a 2.5-inch conduit that was near the bottom of the box to allow for water to drain out.
Okay, and then I think that you had mentioned things that had happened since the spill, that the conduits have now been rerouted over the walls?
Correct.
And has the shunt trip switch that was the problem now been separated so that it only controls two pumps at a time instead of all four?
I do not know that that work has been completed. I understood that that work might be taking place so okay. that they would isolate those shunt trip switches so that to minimize the exposure. I don't know that the work has actually taken place personally.
Okay.
It was anticipated to be done. It was a suggestion that we made.
Okay, and then I think that you had talked about the boxes being raised.
Right.
Would this be that kind of work that they're now
right.
above grade?
Right. See the ramp here to the lid of the box. This is where an extension ring was placed on the top of the box to raise it. It looks like about 4 inches, and then a concrete ramp, you know, to prevent a trip hazard, and then the lid goes inside of that box. So it was raised to prevent ponding water getting in there that would just run right in.
Okay.
Incidental water could get in, during the event of the 19th, of course, water was 12 inches above that, the surrounding territory there. So the 4-inch box extension didn't provide the protection.
Thorne? Yes, that's Exhibit 71. We're going to show you the front page. I wanted to show the picture first. So this is Exhibit 71, and the date on that is 2007. I think Mr. Young had asked a time frame. So thank you very much, Mr. Thoma.
Any recross?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thoma.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Now we will go back to the prosecution's team.
Okay.
Case in chief.
Sure. We're going to go slightly out of order and call Mr. Horner.